You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome, everybody, as you always are, here on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle Cohen. And as always, I have an amazing guest today. And this is one of my favorite subjects because, you know, I think that this particular diagnosis baffles so many people. And I know Dr. Tracy Kimball. Hi, Tracy. I know that she encounters so many patients, you know, in her practice and is an expert on narcissism and trauma, particularly for women, but also for men. Welcome to the show, Tracy.
Thank you very much, Dr. Michelle. I'm excited to be here and talk about a subject that needs to be talked about and the fire needs to be taken out of it so it becomes much more approachable and is what it is. About it.
Yes. And this is the most comprehensive book I've ever read on narcissistic personality disorder. And I'm going to show it here, folks, so we can just right there. Sorry about the glare. It's called Narctionary. I love that. You're the best. The Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Dictionary. Dr. Tracy Kimball. She is an expert. And gosh, you've been doing this for a while and helping folks for over 30 years. Are you, you're 30, aren't you? How could you do that? You must have been like 14 years old.
Oh my goodness. I'm 59.
No, you're not.
I'm not a life underneath me.
Oh. Well, I'll just set it up here. Dr. Tracy has been a light source for women faced with narcissistic trauma. And she opened her nonprofit, WIN, W-I-N Foundation, in 1996 with her online Reclaiming the Program, where she helps women really redeem their life after narcissistic abuse. And of course, Dr. Tracy is the author of 5 books, and we'll be sharing that at the end of the show where you can get a hold of her, find out about her programs, get her books, and especially the book we're talking about today, Narctionary, the Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Dictionary. So it's a fascinating book because I don't think a lot of people realize the abuse that they suffer. And by the way, don't tune out. Men, please, this is for you too. This book is for you to understand and nail when you say, oh my gosh, I had a partner that was like that. Why partner, whatever. Oh, I have a coworker, or, you know, I'm in some kind of family, right? Relationship with someone who is, you know, spot on with this particular diagnosis. So it's, you know, it's an insane world. And we do suffer a lot of trauma when we're in a relationship with a narcissist. And I really want to get into your book and what it's like to be a survivor, as you are, actually. So let's just talk about you and your story. And first off, what was it, Dr. Tracy, that made you decide to write this book?
Well, I've been in the recovery industry for 30 years. And, and the way that I became so familiar, obviously I have my PhD in education, but I have my triple PhD and black belt in trauma.
There you go, girl. That's right.
Hey, when I remember being young and, you know, we all have a specialty, and I remember thinking, I'm a specialist in tolerating the intolerable, you know,
and as
my mom says, nobody's ever going to give you a trophy for that one. So I got into the world of narcissism, of course, as an adult, but it really stemmed from my childhood upbringing, where there was narcissism within the as a base foundation, the personality type. So the personality of narcissism became a baseline for me. I thought that this was just how all people behave. Yeah. And it's not that it didn't hurt. It's not that I didn't feel that something was wrong.
Right.
I just didn't understand it because it was my definition of normal.
Yes, exactly. So is narcissism, you know, someone may have the diagnosis or have all of, you know, the symptomology or maybe characteristics. Is that inherited or is it because of the environment? And
that's a really big question. And to answer that question, we are not born narcissists. That what happens is each and every one of us, we come into this universe as a beautiful white canvas, and the life that we are exposed to, the environments that we are exposed to, paint the color and shades of who we grow up to be. And so with people who become a narcissist, we're normally raised by a narcissist. You know, there are three basically children or types that come out of a narcissistic environment. And one of them, the golden child, ends up growing up and being a narcissist and just carrying on.
Oh boy.
Survival mechanism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. So can you talk about your story about, you know, being married to the sheep in wolf's clothing, or the wolf in sheep's clothing?
I tell you. Well,
oh my God.
Well, here's the thing is I was just sharing yesterday that people say, you know, I half laugh because it is behind me being able to, you know, have a black belt and tolerating the intolerable. But that's a classic sign of a trauma victim, is that we don't realize. I always say that the way that I would describe myself is that I would have, it's as though I had my hand on an open grill or an electric stove.
Right.
And normal people with normal responses and normal upbringings would walk by me and they're like, doesn't that hurt? And I'd be like, yeah. And they'd say, don't you want to remove it? And my thought process as somebody who was traumatized was, can I? Yeah. And so I didn't understand that I had the power to change and move things. So what happened with me is, as this was a normalized environment for me, it had to reach really extreme levels for me to sense that there was a problem, because my baseline, that tolerance was already running in high levels. So my life really had to reach extreme levels for me to understand, wow, this is super painful and dangerous, and I need to do something to change my life. And my recovery happened in two phases. The first one was getting out of the highly, obviously abusive relationship.
Right.
And a common question that I get is every person who abuses,
right?
I'm not talking about somebody who's having a bad day. I'm talking about somebody who has an abusive personality.
Sure.
Are they narcissistic? And my answer is yes. Are all narcissists abusive? No, there can be some nice narcissists. They just don't leave any air in the room for anybody else.
That's, you know? That's true. So you sort of got into a relationship with this person, and again, I guess you might call it, you're just so used to trauma that you don't recognize, because of, I don't want to say the comfort, I want to say more like just it's familiar. Yes, exactly. And a lot of people, that's it. They're like, oh my gosh, do you think I'm in a, why do I feel so terrible? What, you know, that kind of thing. So you had a tough situation. And so how do you define a classic narcissist?
Well, so the thing about narcissism is, you know, we're talking about a condition that's relatively new in the recovery world. And when I say relatively new, I'm talking five, seven years where people are really starting to say, this is, you know, narcissism is something we all have.
Right.
And it's something that we actually all need. And we're talking about a spectrum disorder.
Sure.
So we all need this healthy narcissism that's right here, that allows me to keep the good in and the bad out and say, not to me.
It's like survival, huh? Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and this is what we need for healthy boundaries. You know, that sense of self-protection, that self-sense honor, that sense of self-value, that we say, no, this is not healthy for my life. This is not good for me. I need to move on. And we move on. As narcissism moves on up the scale, it then merges into something. It's not like pregnancy. It's not like we're not a narcissist. We're all guilty on our bad days of probably behaving narcissistically, not having empathy towards somebody else. But that's a bad day and few and far between. as this condition merges on up the scale, it then merges into something that's called narcissistic characteristics. Okay. And this is a very difficult person. Mm-hmm. And it means that they're episodic. They'll go benign, episodic. And then as it continues to move on up the scale, it then goes into narcissistic personality disorder. And this is a very problematic person. Sure. This is somebody whose people's lives are being destroyed at this point,
right,
by the choices. Mm-hmm. I mean, already at high narcissistic characteristics, it's destructive. And then as it moves on up the scale, it merges into antisocial personality disorder, which is sociopath and psychopath. And these are the type of people that we just completely want to stay away from. They're very dangerous people. Well,
sure.
The interesting thing on the opposite side.
Sure, they are.
Yeah. So, you know, we're not born, like you said earlier, we're not born that way. Trauma happens. We end up somewhere on the scale. Sure. And what they've discovered, to answer your question, is that there's not just one type of a narcissist. There's, you know, the classic narcissist, where you think of that very grandiose, you know, I didn't say the difference between a person who has self-love and a narcissist is that the people who are healthy and normal have self-love, and a narcissist is a self-lover. And there's a very big difference. So there's that classic grandiose narcissist. There's the covert narcissist. And a covert narcissist is somebody who's just the perpetual victim. And they are always drawing all the attention back to them because they're perpetually sick. They're perpetually depressed. They're perpetually the victim of something. There is the cerebral narcissist.
Uh-huh,
and the cerebral narcissist is the academic who looks down their nose at you and thinks that, you know, they are the smartest. There's no other opinion in the room because they're the best. And then there's the altruistic narcissist these are the ones that oftentimes lead cults. Come across as, so there's various different types of narcissism out there.
Yes. And by the way, there are 350 words defined in this narctionary for you to understand what you're dealing with. And you actually divide this up into three different categories. So can you talk a little bit about those? That'd be great.
So I did. So in the, you know, this book covers 350 words and terms that you find within the world of narcissism, narcissistic abuse trauma, and narcissistic abuse recovery. So there's three different categories in the book. It's alphabetized, but next to it, I have these little emojis, and one emoji represents something that is narcissistic abuse. For example, gaslighting would be narcissistic abuse. Then there's narcissistic abuse trauma, which would be like the invisible syndrome. That means, when a person feels invisible, so identity theft. And people think that means somebody stealing your driver's license. But no, identity theft is when a narcissist actually comes in and starts to take over your personality and you become invisible. And then there's words connected to narcissistic recovery.
Yeah.
And so they're categorized in three different ways.
And that's beautifully done because people can really understand. And you have little markers, identifications as to what, you know, category these fit in. Let me just show you folks, just little T's here. So on each page, we have the definition of all those three categories: narcissistic fatigue, narcissistic filter, induced depression, induced fear, injury, narcissistic mind reading, all of these wonderful things. And it really does identify all of these things that you can say, oh my gosh, this is the abuse I've suffered. This is exactly what happened to me. This is how this person, you know, did this to me. And what is it that makes people finally realize that they're with someone, you know, who is really very,
destructive
and really not good for them. I mean, what is it that kind of makes someone say, get the aha moment of, this is not okay, finally?
I think pain. I think that would be the biggest one. I know that when I finally went for help, that I walked into my therapist's office, and this was years and years and years ago before it had names and whatnot. And that's why I wrote the Narctionary, is to give name to all these ghosts of narcissism. And I walked in, and as the therapist says, you know, why are you here? And the only thing I could tell them was my brain feels like it's mush, and I feel invisible.
Wow.
And so that was the point that I went for help, that I had just lost the ability to manage my life, and nothing made sense, and I was exhausted because I was on the classic cycle of the fuel sourcing, in that I was working so hard to try to make this other person happy, or to bring us back to where we used to be.
Sure,
because it was, you know, all these relationships always start out wonderful.
Sure,
and, you know, that's why there's a term, love bombing.
Right. Yeah.
And so you end up getting narcissistic fatigue that you just had mentioned, because you're so busy trying to, especially as an empath,
right,
get the relationship back to good, do your part, own your part. And, you know, when you're with a narcissist, they, you know, anything that goes wrong, I have said, you know, if the sun didn't come up in the morning, somehow it was my fault, you know.
Right, no kidding.
So that's how I went. I think that most people end up, most of the people who come through our program, they walk through the program for two reasons. They're exhausted. They may have heard something that says, maybe this is how I need help, because they're dealing with ghosts, you know. Sure. And or they've heard about us, and we're speaking a language that they're thirsty for in order to be able to heal.
Sure. And that makes sense. I mean, it really is. So I love in your words in your book, what's Narcyville?
Okay. So when I went to go write this book, my mother gave me this great story when we were young, this tool. And she said, you know, my darling, whenever you're in pain and life has a pain, it's like fighting a ghost. And the only way that we can heal is by giving it a name and pulling it into our life. And if we don't, if it doesn't have a name, we're just like this. We can't grab hold of it. We can't pull it in. We can't mend it and bend it in and heal it. But when something has a name, we're able to grab a hold of it.
Right.
We're able to look at it clearly and say, this is exactly what I'm dealing with, and then come up with a plan. Do I want to mend it, or do I want to push it out of my life?
Right.
So I have learned along my journey to, as quickly as possible, give name to these ghosts of narcissism. And I came up with the name Narcyville because I say that, you know, when you find yourself under the manipulations of a narcissist, it's no different than getting onboarded onto a cult, that you're suddenly living in a world of its own. Only the cult members get to say, you know, I'm living in the Jim Jones community or something of that nature. Yeah. Well, when you're alone in a relationship and you don't know where you've been transported to, I gave it a name that we get onboarded to this world called Narcyville. And the goal is to get out of Narcyville.
Yeah. So what are the ghosts that Mumsy was talking about?
The ghosts were all the no name. Okay, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
The way that I actually sat down and I wrote this book is that I got a call one day, and it was actually from somebody who has known me for a long time, and it was a personal friend of mine, and suddenly found herself, and I could tell that she was with somebody who was highly, highly narcissistic.
Yeah.
And suddenly life was perfect for her. And then one day he did what many narcissists do, and I'm not using male, female, just in this situation, it was a husband and wife situation.
Uh-huh.
He did the discard, which is the third phase of the narcissistic cycle, and up and left and put her out like trash.
Oh,
and she was on the floor and devastated. And so she called me. She's like, I don't know who to reach out to. I don't know what I'm going through. So she begins to tell me her story, which is all of our stories are very similar. And she says, well, I just can't believe you just da-da-da-da-da. And I said, well, that's called the discard. She says, what's the discard?
Oh,
I said,
my God.
They leave without notice and put you out like trash. She goes, oh, my gosh. She says, I feel so confused about everything because it's, you know, I went through this, this, and this. And I said, ah, that's called word salading. And she goes, what's word salading?
Oh, my gosh.
Word salading is when the narcissist will jumble the conversation with so many words that you lose the point of what you're trying to talk about, so nothing ever goes into resolution. And and then she said, and then, you know, I behave like, you know, like this, that, and the other. And I said, well, you had abuse amnesia. And she's like, what's abuse amnesia? And so what happened was that she says to me, well, you should put all these in one book so we newbies can just glance through and give name to all these crazy things that we're going through. And I literally picked up my phone where I had my own list that I'd been keeping for years. And I already had it alphabetized.
It's all there.
And that's how Narctionary came about. And the purpose is to give name to all those crazy behaviors that happen to those who are exposed to narcissistic abuse.
Well, that's beautiful. By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with my special guest here, Dr. Tracy Kemble. She's written an amazing book, Narctionary. I would really recommend this if you feel that you have experienced narcissistic abuse of any kind, or a loved one, family friend, girlfriends, whatever, and men also. I want you to read this book because it'll help you identify certain characteristics of abuse that you may have been experiencing, and also why you kind of bought into it, you know? So there is a thing about, like you mentioned a little bit earlier, Tracy, we just sort of get used to it. It's almost like we're numb to it, and it seems normal because that's what we have experienced in our early environment as well.
Right. And people who perhaps didn't come from a baseline where there was narcissism in it, and they find themselves suddenly in it, they may have more of a naivety, like they don't understand that people, manipulative people out there really exist. And so suddenly they find themselves into it, and they say, how in the world did I get here? And my answer is slowly, but there is actually a process within the narcissist that it's called narcissistic conditioning. And what they do is they identify their target, and they're like, this is going to be an easy person. The goal of a narcissist is to get fuel, because they are like a cell phone battery, that if they're not constantly being infused with attention and recognition, good or bad, let me just say, when you sit there and cry and break down over them, you're fuel forcing that person. That was a big one for me to learn.
Yes.
That they begin to feel invisible. And so this is why they demand so much attention from the people around them. But what they do is they look for, especially what I call wounded empaths, where somebody who has so much love and charisma and enthusiasm and depth to give and insight to give, only they're wounded, so they don't know how to recognize the narcissist. Oh. It's a perfect combination.
Sure.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And I mean, again, it just baffles me because, I mean, I used to work in a psychiatric clinic where they had what are called dual diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So we had substance abuse and or an Axis 1 disorder, major depressive disorder, bipolar 1 disorder, with what we call an Axis 2. So that would be personality disorders. And in that cluster B, as you know, are, you know, I think the four big ones. You know, we have histrionic, narcissistic, borderline, and, you know, so the thing is that one of the most common features is lack of empathy. It's almost, I compare it almost to someone who is autistic. I mean, there is no, well, I mean, that's, I think, the most baffling thing for victims of narcissistic abuse is, like, you know, my dad's in the hospital. He's suffering. He's getting chemo and radiation. I'm going to go hang out with the guys and have a few drinks. No, I want you to come with me.
I'm going to go to church and help people.
Yeah. Oh, what?
Okay.
Yes. And you know that in your narcissism, that is another thing, you know, about this. They kind of know all. They know it all. They know how to do it, and they always praise themselves and continuously say, "You see how I did this for you? You see how I helped these other people?" You know, that
I
kind of thing.
mean, what people say, how do you recognize a narcissist? And I said, well, okay, there is a checklist that you can go down, but there's different types of narcissism. But one of the things that I say is there's two signs. All roads lead back to self. And what you can do is bring up any subject in the world. I cleaned the sink today. I remember when I cleaned the sink and I did it. All roads lead back to self. And
That's right.
that's that lack of empathy. That's not having the ability to sit and listen and absorb. They do, but what it is, it's a fault. It's under the F section. It's called false empathy, that they're not having empathy where they're being an active listener and taking in that other person's life experience. They're vetting you. They're collecting information so that they know how to fuel source you in the future.
God, isn't, doesn't that suck? And that, I know that that the word gaslighting is being thrown around by everybody, and
Exactly.
can you talk a little bit more about gaslighting and really what that is about? Because I don't know if people really understand that.
Yes, the reason that gaslighting is confusing is there's no such word in recovery or necessarily when we think of a gaslight, we think of a light that's outside that is lit by gas. And that's literally where it stems from. It stems from an old movie where there was a man trying to make his wife feel crazy, so he would flick the gas lights.
Oh,
So
yeah.
it kind of took it took on its name because of that. And that's one that a lot of people who are in the trauma can't remember what's happening. But to make a long story short, gaslighting means that somebody is trying to make you doubt your own reality. They try to make you question your interpretation of things. They try to make you question what you really saw and what you really heard. They try to make you question as I said, your perception and just that so that you start to doubt yourself. So that
I
they
think
can get away. It's a two-part
exactly.
high for them. They get high watching you go a little crazy, and they get high because when you are crazy, they can get on with their secondary life.
Yeah, exactly. And that's right. I remember seeing that, that was one of our assignments, we had to watch the movie to understand what that was about. And it was
Exactly.
black and white. It was a really old film, but fascinating. He'd flicker the lights and she'd go, "Oh my gosh, there's so and he'd say, "What are you talking about? I don't see the lights are flickering. What do you mean?" And there'd be noises that he'd create. She goes, "Did you hear that?" And he'd say, "No, I don't know what you're, in other words, crazy making."
Yeah, and let's bring it crazy making exactly is the end result of it. Let's bring that current. So what does that look like in a today relationship? That would look like, hey, I think you're giving that other person a little bit too much attention when I'm supposed to be your primary mate in life. You know what? No, we're just friends. Hey, I can't find there was money in this account and it got moved. I don't know. What would that be? I don't appreciate when you speak down to me and act and don't give me a voice in the room. What are you talking about? I'm not speaking down to you. And my recovery point is that just because they say it doesn't make it true. And that's one of the mantras that I teach my clients in my program is just because they say it doesn't make it true. And that is something that you have to say over and over and over in order to be able to hold on to your truth.
Oh my goodness, Tracy. That is so true. So, it's a fascinating phenomenon, and I think so many people are just so confused because it's not, huh? What did I do? And it's spun to where you feel like there's something wrong with you, like in gaslighting, but also you start to feel guilty, especially if you're a person who has a conscience and you have empathy and you buy into it and you're in this whole kind of, it's like a cult, like you said, almost.
It is. And, you know, if you think about it, the reason that I think that narcissistic abuse happens to more women than men is some of it's culture. You know, they're raised with more power than women. And that whole thing, right. That's secondary. Sure. But also, I think by nature, we women will own things that aren't ours by nature. And I think that's what makes us mothers and things of that nature, where, you know, if our child's, it's my fault, what did I do wrong? And this is just kind of in our human nature. You add traumas to that.
Yes, yes.
And you have a working target.
Well, that makes so much sense. Yeah, absolutely. So Dr. Tracy, is there a difference between men and women narcissists?
One comes with makeup and high heels. And I'm being very stereotypical, but no.
I love it.
I think that the biggest difference is that women can get away with throwing temper tantrums with tears more than men. And I'm not saying... I'm not saying not to cry, because our tears are feedback from our emotional system. But if you're in a relationship with somebody who's crying too much and manipulating through their tears, this could be a female narcissist. Or if you're in a relationship and you're crying too much, love isn't supposed to hurt that bad. You're not supposed to be crying when you're in love. So
exactly. No, yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely.
I don't think that there is a difference. Maybe that the delivery of it, but, and I, with men, I think it's even harder for them to reach out for help because of all the messaging of, you know, I'm a man and be stronger than this. But you can, the mind manipulation can affect both men and women.
Oh, boy, is that true. And make you think like you're going crazy, you know. So, I mean, that's really tough. So let's talk about the wounds that we suffer, because, you know, you have three different types of, you know, most common issues going on in your book. And so what are some of the after effects of the trauma that we experience from being with someone who has narcissistic personality issues?
Gosh. Well, I think that the biggest one that isn't talked about enough is when many people go into, I mean, first off, you feel powerlessness in your life. The reason is, and the people who don't seek help have to realize that you're going to debilitate yourself for life, because there's a very interesting dynamic with narcissistic abuse, is that if I hit you, you have a superficial wound, right?
Right.
And then it's going to heal and whatnot. Well, what happens with narcissistic, especially with the psychological trauma, it will hit you here, and the wound goes this deep. Well, the next time, unless you hear, it's going this deep. And then it's going this deep. And so what happens is these wounds can be deep inside your emotional system. Right. It, because you're in a physical state of fight and flight for so long, your brain actually changes because of your stress reactors are overactive. And that's very unhealthy. You have memory fade. So these are... You have anxiety, you have depression, you have brain fog, all these different things. But the main thing that I would classify this as is there is one condition that all narcissistic trauma victims end up with, and it's something that is called CPTSD. Yes. It is not PTSD, it is CPTSD. Right. Mm-hmm. And the big difference is that we have a family friend, and she was at the Las Vegas shootings. And
oh my gosh.
Diagnosed with PTSD. Oh. And along her journey to healing, whenever she would have the after effects of the anxiety or the depression or the mind racism, she was able to take this and put it in a box and say, I'm feeling anxious because on this day, at this time, this exact action happened to me.
Right.
But you can't do that with narcissism, because what if you were gaslit 1,000 times? That causes trauma.
Yes.
But if I go to you and I say, especially if I'm the narcissist, tell me when I did that. Because of our abuse amnesia and because of the thousands of times it's happened, we're not able to say on this day at this time.
Exactly.
So
it's just
we don't get one of the number one things that a trauma victim needs, which is to bear witness, which is somebody to say, yes, this happened. Yes, I believe you. Yes, it's real. You need that to begin to heal. So I would think that it's the CPSD that is really the big trauma wound that's left over and all the trickle-down effect of that.
It makes so much sense. Absolutely. And that, you know, they say those continual, you know, trauma patterns and thoughts and feelings that fire together, wire together. So you have this big hairy neural pattern in your brain of, you know, just it's normal. And the more you're living with someone or the more that you feel like you're not worthy or you're abused or whatever, that neural pattern just continues to feed itself and it becomes habitual and you're exactly. used to it, right? You're just so used to it.
And you think it's normal. Well, that's kind of like if you look at the cover of my book, when we were talking about the design, it's such a simple cover, but it says so much that, you know, on the outside we have our faces and then that whole scribble section represents what happens to our brain.
There you go, folks. Zoom in,
And the recovery from it is being able to bring clarity
to
what you've been through.
That's right. Bringing clarity. And there are specialists like yourself who really help a lot of people out, you know, with narcissistic abuse, rather if it's from an early environment or a relationship with a friend or a romantic relationship, of course, and that kind of thing. So can you talk a little bit about your program and your nonprofit organization as well?
Oh, thank you. That's my labor of love in life. So after I went through all of my recovery, I was asked by my husband, so what are you going to do with all this information that you have? And I said, nothing. I am going through my life. I am never looking back. What happens if you run into somebody, a young version of you later in life? And I was mad at him for days. And then I get big spiritual downloads and then also came to me women in need, turning a negative into a positive. So 30 years ago, I started the nonprofit that specializes in abuse recovery. In the additional rounds of my personal recovery, understanding that narcissism is behind a lot of abusive people, if not all. And there's a special trauma that comes from it. I specialize the program into narcissistic abuse. It's called Reclaiming Me. It takes place in live classrooms twice a week for the past 30 years.
Amazing.
It is.
And people can find out more about that. How?
They can find out. Our website is drtracy.tv. If you get the book, there's a little barcode because sometimes we're kind of brain foggy when we've been traumatized. Just click your phone up to the barcode and it will take you right over to the classrooms. Everybody who comes and joins us, you're always a first-time guest and the classes are only $10 each because we're so passionate about making sure that people get the recovery that they need. Sure. And some people cannot afford $150 a session. So this is another way to get through it. And also, you know, part of being a narcissistic abuse victim is isolation. And so this allows you to safely be with other people who are speaking your language and giving you validation to the trauma that you went through.
Right. Isn't that something to be able to identify and say, oh my gosh, I experienced the same exact thing. And that's the healing process too, is the validation. Could we talk about some of the language that you discuss, you know, the healing language in your book as part of your 350 words?
So I often get asked, what is your favorite word in the book? And my favorite word in the book is, it's called poop in your soup. And it was one of the recovery words given to me, and it really was a big wake up to me, especially as I said at the beginning of the interview that, you know, I have a black belt in tolerating the intolerable.
Oh, you do, girl.
Terminology was a big wake up call to me, and what it means is that accept accepting even small doses of narcissism is like having poop in your soup.
Oh God.
It's just never okay. And if somebody were to come up to you and say, hey, our specialty today is a little soup with some poop in it, would you like some? We would say, why would you think I would like that? And so it was just a big wake-up call to me that when I find myself tolerating it, I just say, Tracy, you don't eat poop in your soup. And if you don't eat poop in your soup, then even a dose of narcissism is not okay for you.
Right, exactly. And sometimes we just get used to the poop. It's like, oh, you know what? I guess it's okay. It kind of tastes weird, but I just...
And then we wonder why we're sick, right?
And I'm exactly. And I'm looking at poop in your soup right here. Poop in your soup. But I mean, this is amazing. 350 words. It's Narctionary, the Narcissist Abuse Recovery Dictionary. And it really will help you out and understand some of the abuse you've been dealing with, what some of these words mean, how to define certain characteristics within someone who may have narcissistic personality. And, you know, in the DSM-5, right, ICD-10, you know, they have criteria that the narcissistic personality person has to meet. But, you know, I love it in your book because you go way beyond that. You know, they say if you meet 5 of the 8 to 9, you know, if this person meets 5 of the 8 to 9 characteristics in the book, they're defined as narcissistic personality. But you go so much farther than that. And, you know, it's just, it's lovely because you, oh my God, you're, you know.
There's a ghost. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, why that was important to me is because years and years before I reached out for help, I remember somebody gave me a book. I think it was called The Malignant Narcissist or something of that nature.
Right.
And it was so intense and over my head. And they were really describing somebody who was more sociopathic. And so I wasn't able, it didn't explain this is a spectrum disorder and, you know, the trauma wounds can happen along the way. Like so many things that I needed as just a lay person who was, you know, holding on to life, where I looked at it and I'm like, okay, yes, 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 no, no, no. Oh, I didn't make the number. But that is because I was not necessarily dealing with a malignant narcissist. What about a covert narcissist?
Right.
What about a cerebral narcissist? You know, what...
Right.
So there, now that there's so many different ones, I don't think that perhaps there's the checklist for the classic narcissist, but.
Right, right.
You know, when
it's
you.
True.
Yeah.
No, when you, exactly.
When you talk about somebody who's a covert narcissist, they're not grandiose.
Yeah.
In fact, they come across, you know, so much more meek and
sweet
and needing to be rescued. So you're like, nope, that doesn't fit the book. And yet you're tortured by that person.
It's really true. No, it's amazing. Okay, so let's see. My office partner, who I love, he's really awesome. He said to me when we first started out working together 20 years ago, he said, just want you to know, and he'd been doing it for years. He's older than I am. He's the best. He's a professor at UCLA. He's also, you know, he's just amazing. And he said to me, just a heads up, because he saw couples coming into our office who I would see to counsel. And he'd say, when you're counseling couples, I want you to always look for that one person in the relationship that's probably a narcissist or a borderline, which is in the Axis 2 Cluster B category. And he'd say, just know and heads up. You know, this is when I was younger and starting out. He said, heads up, just sort of identify that so you know the dynamic so you can see what you're dealing with. Do you think that that's the case many times?
Well, you know, I think that as a professional, the biggest thing that we have to learn is just to go into that pause and look and listen and, you know, let things shake out long enough that you're able to identify.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's obvious. I mean, sometimes
people
you're like, okay, you're the bully and you're the victim. And this is so clear. Because here's the thing is that research now shows that there's only two relationships that make a narcissistic relationship stand. And that is a narcissist with a narcissist right? Where it's right? like they're always going feeding off of each other and fueling
sure.
each other and
sure.
you know, or a narcissist and a self-deprecate.
Right. Okay. Right? That makes sense. Yeah.
And this creates, this is, these are the same side of the coin, and these are the opposite side of the coin.
Right,
and
right.
Here's something really interesting from a psychological standpoint. So remember that spectrum I talked about earlier?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Along my recovery journey, and what I think really separates how I approach the recovery of narcissistic abuse trauma is I had like an epiphanic moment thought one day where I was looking at the spectrum. And the thought came to me, well, what's at the other end of the spectrum? Does it end just at
right.
healthy? Well, what right. research shows is that at the opposite end of the spectrum is this thing called self-love deficiency disorder.
Right.
So I switched my focus and I said, what if I stop focusing on the narcissist, trying to educate them on their condition and trying to get them to do the right thing in life and get my eyes off them? And what if I just focused on repairing my self-love foundation?
Beautiful.
And what I found is that a narcissist and a self-love deprecate are on the same spectrum, right? And as I began to heal my self-love foundation, my vibration, my mentality, my philosophies, my belief rose.
Right. Right.
And we just became two energetic beings that could
yes.
no longer align,
right.
which is where I am now, where I used to be, you know, the black belt in tolerating the intolerable. And
right.
now I'm highly allergic to it. That the
yes.
second I get
yes.
around, I'm like, I gotta go.
Right.
I know.
This is heavy. That's right. The energy is so heavy. And we, it's just like, you know, all the air is being sucked out of the room. Is there really any hope, I mean, for folks who have narcissistic personality disorder? Because I, you know, there's a thing that we say, you know, well, they don't think there's anything wrong with them, so why would they come to therapy? You know,
that is, right? That's the long and short of it. Is
yeah.
it possible? I suppose it is, but it's like an alcoholic having to reach that bottom line where they say, I am hurting myself. I am losing people around me. I'm hurting other people, which narcissists don't think that.
Right.
The most I think that they get close to it is I am losing people around me that I don't want to lose. The whole thing is if narcissism if they really, really, really work at it, they can dial back on some behaviors, but it never goes away.
Right.
They will yeah. have their episodes and they can't live in peace for too long. And
right. Exactly. No, that makes so much sense. And so it's sort of identify who you're dealing with and identify your own feelings, get into self-love. And that, by the way, if people would like to find out more, your website is drtracy.tv, right?
Thanks.
You can also connect on social media to find out more at Dr. Tracy Kemble or at Reclaiming
Me.
With Dr. Tracy.
Yeah.
Yay.
Reclaiming Me is the name of the program.
Reclaiming Me with that's right. Reclaiming Me with Dr. Tracy. Beautiful.
And it's the journey from narcissistic abuse trauma to self-love. And I just want to say one last thing that we were just
yeah.
talking about.
Sure.
If you are somebody who's in a narcissistic relationship and you can't leave today, if no contact is not an option, then at least learn to put on a fire suit.
Oh, well said.
So that you can stay protected and not have your life deteriorate on account of a situation that you're in and
right.
cannot leave today.
Right. And thanks to you, you're helping so many victims. So we really appreciate that. This is one of the best books I've ever read on understanding narcissism, how you can heal yourself, understand the signs and the symptoms. And it's a 350-word dictionary. So you'll love it. Dr. Tracy Kemble, thank you so much for being on the couch today. You're awesome.
Thank you so much. It's yeah. been so fun. And you keep up the good work because your work is good.
Thanks. So is yours. Really appreciate it. All right, we'll talk again soon. You're the best.
You too.
Take good care. Bye. All right, thanks so much for joining me today on the couch. Dr. Michelle here, and as I always say, take care of yourself first. And that's not to be a narcissist. That's just to be healthy and observe your feelings and go within and love that which you are. Thanks for watching. I'll be back next week if I can get through this cold. Wednesday, 12 noon Pacific Standard Time. Thanks for joining me. Bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.